From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Hurricane Ian impacts the Southeast and Iran faces upheaval. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Thursday of this week, just a day after Hurricane Ian made landfall in Florida, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins had the chance to talk about the hurricane's impact with Representative Byron Donalds from the 19th District of Florida. Representative Donalds' district encompasses Cape Coral, Fort Myers, and Naples, some of the hardest hit areas of Southwest Florida. Here now is Tony Perkins.
Congressman Donalds, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's good to be back with you. Thanks for having me on.
So your district was heavily impacted by this. Tell us what you know as of right now.
Well, as of right now, obviously we were heavily impacted. All the coastal regions from Marco Island all the way through Sanibel, Captiva, Fort Myers Beach, Bonita Beach, and Cape Coral and Fort Myers all sustained heavy flooding. And you know, basically everybody in the country, if not the world, has seen the pictures and the devastation. Where we are right now is search and rescues happening as we speak. Also, we're actually getting a real assessment of the heavy infrastructure toll and damage that has been done. The immediate need right now is trying to restore access to potable water for the people of Lee County. Our potable water system is out completely right now. Most of the power is out in Lee County. We're going to have to rebuild portions of our grid because of the damage. And then, of course, we have some of our bridges, our causeways to our barrier islands. They were ruptured by this storm. So it's going to be a lot of recovery, a lot of work to be done right here. And you know, but the biggest sigh of relief, if there is one, is that as of now, casualties have remained very, very low. And so we're just still monitoring that. Like I said, a lot of search and rescue is still yet to be done. But, you know, we just take it one step at a time.
So, Congressman, did a lot of folks evacuate? Did they take the warnings and leave the area?
Well, that's the part that's still going to be remains to be seen. I think in Southwest Florida, people have gotten accustomed to these high wind events. We were hit with Hurricane Irma a few years ago. But what we've never had to deal with was this level of storm surge. The storm surge was devastating. There were people who evacuated. We also had people who decided to hunker down. And unfortunately, when they saw the storm surge come in, they tried to get to either on their roofs or try to evacuate altogether. And so right now, the thing that is not known, frankly, is are there any casualties from people who were trapped by storm surge? That's the part we're still trying to assess right now. We don't have an answer to that.
Now, you were in the state legislature. You mentioned Irma. You were in the legislature when that hurricane hit Florida. You mentioned the storm surge. Is that the major difference between those two weather events?
100%. It's without question. Irma, I believe it was a Category 4, a pretty strong Category 4. A storm when it hit Southwest Florida. And the concern at the time was we were expecting 7 to 10 feet of storm surge. Well, the storm surge never materialized. The storm actually broke down on the back end and it never really happened. So you had the wind damage, which was significant enough, but not the flood damage. This storm, completely different. Like I said, every coastal area in Southwest Florida was inundated with anywhere from 3 feet to 16, 18 feet of storm surge. It was very devastating for our area. There's a lot of rebuild that's going to have to take place.
Now, it takes, usually my experience in Louisiana, having gone through a number of these storms in various capacities, usually take 36 hours before you start to get a good assessment. And I think we've gotten a lot better at the first responders in terms of the federal government and others coming in. But what has the early response been from FEMA? It sounds like the president's been working very closely with Governor DeSantis to get the necessary relief materials into the state.
Well, look, I really have to commend our first responders, our Florida Department of Emergency Management, and FEMA. They've all been working hand in hand. The coordination has actually gone quite well. We did a lot of pre-positioning, a lot of pre-planning before this storm, which is a credit really to all three levels. And I think that's really what's important for the people of Southwest Florida. But that work continues. Like you said, these assessments, it's probably going to take us, you know, 36, 48 hours, you know, hopefully it doesn't take 72 hours to get a real understanding of the level of devastation that we're dealing with. And but, you know, FEMA has been a great partner for us through this. I was at FEMA headquarters yesterday, getting a real-time assessment of the assets they have prepared to go into Southwest Florida when the storm passes. That all looks to be going according to plan. The thing you don't know, and you can never really understand with these storms, is the totality of the need. And you can only really get that once you do your initial assessments.
Right.
So they've been a great partner. We're going to continue to work hand in hand with them so that the people of Southwest Florida can recover.
And I was talking with some earlier today, as looking at the pictures coming across television sets in all across America. The pictures just do not tell the full story. You've got to see it firsthand, and when you're there and you see the devastation from a storm like this, it is just overwhelming. And I think one of the things that I, again, through experience, is that people, you get tunnel vision because you're cut off from everything and you become, you know, really discouraged and despondent. And I think that's why it's important to have, you know, the federal government responding. But also, we're going to be talking a little bit later about Samaritan's Purse, bringing hope and help to those affected by these storms. I think it's critically important the rest of the country, you know, lean in and help our neighbors in Florida.
Well, I completely agree with you. During Hurricane Irma, I was on the ground. I was out doing some initial assessments. Right now I'm in Washington. I head back tomorrow to get to work and do that work on the ground. And yeah, when you're in a recovery mode from a major disaster, it could be disheartening sometimes, but I think the key thing is, and I think this is the real special thing about people, when the chips are down, people come together. The politics, that all ends, that goes away. The petty differences, those go away. And people are focused about recovery, helping their neighbor, helping their fellow man. Southwest Florida has been through that before. I know the character of the people, and that's going to happen again. We're just going to pull together, get it done, get life back on track as quickly as we can. And then we can get back to the matters of the day. But any assistance that comes in from around the region, Samaritan's Purse is a great organization. You know, we've done work with them in the past. Also, the state of Florida has stood up a fundraising platform for disaster assistance. It's floridadisasterfund.org. That's floridadisasterfund.org. And that's being administered by the state of Florida to assist the recovery that is gonna go on. I mean, look, I'm going to be direct. Like, we have a lot of work to do. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of hard work, and it's going to take weeks in some areas, if not months in some areas. But we're committed to that task, and we're going to pull together and get it done.
All right. Congressman Donalds, I want to thank you for joining us, and you and your folks will be in our prayers, and we'll be helping, too.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Byron Donalds, as well as ways that you can help the victims of Hurricane Ian, when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Today it can be a challenge finding a quality news source in this media-saturated world, which is why Family Research Council launched The Washington Stand, an online platform with a mission to provide readers with factual news and commentary, all from a biblical worldview. Based in Washington, D.C., our reporters provide accurate and up-to-date information on the biggest stories of the day, ranging from breaking news on crucial Supreme Court cases to the latest stories in public education, details on domestic and international religious liberty reports, and more. The Washington Stand was created to keep you informed on the stories affecting faith, family, and freedom. We realize that trust and credibility must be earned, and we're committed to earning yours. We don't take it for granted that you're giving us your time to read what we write. It's our prayer that what we publish here will help equip you as you stand where you are. It is time to be encouraged, to be in the know, and stand firm in truth. Do so by visiting WashingtonStand.com today.
From Asia to Africa, from the Middle East to Europe and beyond, the global persecution of Christians becomes more ominous with every passing year. Heroic Faith serves as a tribute to the courageous believers who face grave and often deadly threats yet bravely persevere in their devotion to Jesus Christ. The book highlights personal stories from those who endure religious persecution and takes a close look at the tragic circumstances Christians often face due to dangerous and deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold, or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As we continue our coverage of the aftermath of Hurricane Ian, it's important to focus on recovery efforts and how you can help the people impacted. Here's Tony Perkins as he introduces our next guest.
Joining me now to discuss the work that Samaritan's Purse is doing on the ground and will be doing in the weeks, months, and probably years ahead is Edward Graham, Vice President of Operations for Samaritan's Purse. Edward, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
Well, first off, I want to thank you and all the team at Samaritan's Purse for the great job that you guys do. Anytime there's a crisis such as this, you guys are there. So tell us what you're learning and hearing from your team that's already on the ground in Florida.
Yeah, you're watching the news as well, and our team's reporting similar. The devastation, especially the wind damage, the water damage, the flooding, the storm surge that came into many of these places. Fort Myers, one of the epicenter there, we have teams looking at. My sister is actually from there. That's where she lives, has a home there. She's actually up with us right now here in the mountains getting away from it. But the teams are responding to those locations. And we always work through the local church. As you just talked about, we've partnered and lived at your church. And so we're getting the story and the assessment from them, but it's great devastation. I mean, massive amounts. So our teams have left this morning out of North Wilkesboro, North Carolina, with our equipment to head up and link up with our assessors and to get the volunteers out there as soon as possible.
Now, you're still doing work in Kentucky from the flooding that took place there just a couple of months ago.
Yeah, that's correct. We've been up in Kentucky. Matter of fact, we're still in Mayfield, Kentucky, where the tornado hit last Christmas, where we're doing rebuilds, building homes for the non-insured and underinsured there. We're responding in the other part of Kentucky to the eastern part with the floods. We're here now. We're still in Louisiana and parts of there doing rebuilds. As you said, we don't leave until the job's done. But we're going to be doing disaster relief in Florida. I have a feeling not just for weeks, but for months. It's going to be bad. And then from there, we'll assess about rebuild if we need to help those getting back into homes. But as you stated before, you need to be praying. Pray for this part of Florida. The storm's still going on. We have left one of our truck teams here in North Carolina available to go out with volunteers to see where this storm goes. If not, we'll surge it down to Florida to plus up our efforts there. But this is where we partner with the local church. The church does great things for their communities. And after we leave, we want to see the church thriving and following up with those new believers and making sure they're being discipled.
And of course, you go in with Billy Graham Ministries and their chaplains, disaster relief chaplains. And I can just say from experience, when we partnered with Samaritan's Purse during the course of the year, as the ministry went on, we baptized over 100 people in our churches. So it's a holistic ministry, not just helping people muck out their homes and piece their lives back together, but it really is giving them hope. And that's what's so, I think, important to know about the work that Samaritan's Purse does.
You're exactly right. You know, at Samaritan's Purse, we meet the immediate needs, the immediate physical, just like the Good Samaritan, where he bandaged, he gave water, he gave transportation. But as you know, we both know the most important part of that story is a debt had to be paid. He paid the debt to the innkeeper to make sure that he could stay at that house. The debt that Jesus Christ paid, that's what we want these homeowners to know when they've lost hope, that God has not forsaken them. And so the Billy Graham Rapid Response Chaplains do an incredible job with that. They're actually, we also deployed teams down to Puerto Rico. And we've been down there serving. We had an aircraft go down there, our cargo plane go down earlier in the week, and they're serving there. And we're also putting another hospital in Ukraine, and where those cities that were just liberated, we have BGA-trained RT chaplains there serving alongside our doctors.
So, Edward, as folks are concerned about what's happening in Florida and they want to do something, there's ways to help. They can give money to the Samaritan's Purse, but they can also begin to line up to volunteer to go down and help in the relief effort.
Now, you're exactly right. First, ask for your prayers. You already mentioned that. And that's the most important part, is pray for the state and for those homeowners, and pray for our teams that are responding. But if you're willing and able, and you may cannot do it this week, but maybe it's next week, we're going to be there, as you said, for weeks or months. But go to SamaritansPurse.org, and it'll say how to get involved. And you can sign up for this response here in Florida and get down there. It doesn't matter what your background, construction. You could be a school teacher, a coach. It doesn't matter. We just need people that are willing to go out and serve and love their neighbors. So it's going to be tarping roofs, mucking out homes, cutting back the drywall. We want to get these homeowners quickly back into their houses.
All right, Edward, we'll be checking back in with you next week once you get down on there on the ground and get an assessment of the needs, and we'll encourage people to get in touch with you guys to volunteer and to give money, contribute to the great work that you guys do. We really appreciate it.
Well, Tom, we appreciate it. Thank you for your program.
You can find out more about what Samaritan's Purse is doing to help people all over when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
With the current division and confusion in our culture, it is so important for Christians to ground themselves in the truth of God's Word. We must be prepared to respond to the culture with the reason for the hope that we have. This is why Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview exists. The center applies the Bible and the historical teachings of the church to a wide range of current issues. We help Christians understand why we can trust our lives to Scripture. We equip believers to advance and defend the faith in the workplace, in schools, in their communities, and in the public square. The experts at the center address and provide resources on issues like religious liberty, abortion, voting, marriage, and sexuality. To access our free resources, like the Biblical Worldview series, go to frc.org/worldview to get highlights of the latest work of the Worldview Fellows, including blogs, op-eds, interviews, and publications. Sign up at frc.org/subscribe.
Today, we live in a culture where young men, husbands, and fathers are constantly presented with terrible illustrations of manhood. In this culture of gender confusion, how can boys and men figure out what it even means to be a man of God? That is why Family Research Council created Stand Courageous Men's Ministry. It's led by men who are compassionate leaders, who understand the issues of the day, and will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, chaplains, and battle buddies, so that we can embrace our identity as men and fight the battles every man faces. God made each one of us on purpose, and He had a purpose for making you a man. Stand Courageous offers many resources to help you step into your God-given role. We have podcasts, coaching videos, books, Bible reading plans, community opportunities, and more. Men, this ministry is for you. Learn more and access our resources at standcourageous.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. There have been mass protests in Iran for days after a young woman's death while in the custody of the so-called morality police. This is highly unusual in a country like Iran, and Tony Perkins invited CBN News Middle East correspondent Chris Mitchell on to discuss the repercussions.
Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you again.
So, what's the latest that's happening there in Iran?
Well, from my understanding, Tony, the latest is about 88 people officially have been killed during the protests, but that number is likely much higher than that, because what happens sometimes when people go to recover the body of their loved ones, they have to, in order to get the body, they have to actually pledge that they will remain quiet. So a lot of people, as you said, dozens of people have died. Apparently on Saturday, there's a protest planned in daylight in Tehran. So that's one thing to be keeping an eye on. Another thing that's happening inside of the country is some of the businesses are beginning to close down in support of the protest. So it doesn't seem to be slowing down. It has spread throughout the country. And one thing to note too, the internet seems to have been shut down, despite the fact that Elon Musk had said that he would activate Starlink. It's a little problematic because he needs receivers on the ground to spread that internet. So the government is trying to just shut down any social media that's coming out of Iran. But these protests seem to be very widespread and very fervent.
So we've had protests before in Iran. Yeah. What's the difference about the current protest?
Well, there are some similarities between the protests that were in 2009, the so-called Green Revolution. There have been protests since every year since 2017 in one form or another. Perhaps the difference here is how deeply it is among the people. It's not just about the hijabs. That's certainly the focal point right now, but it goes deeper than that. People really do want regime change. They don't want a moderate regime. They want this regime that's lasted since 1979 to be toppled. One encouraging news is that two U.S. senators, Senator Bob Menendez, Senator Mike Rounds, have called for a regime change. And I talked to earlier today to a Iranian person that's now living in the U.S. Said that's huge development, that some of the senators would go that far to change or advocate a change in U.S. policy. And also, if we see other nations start to support these protests, that could make a difference. But a lot of people, Tony, are asking the question, you know, is this a tipping point that the right. regime could change? It's very hard to say what will happen, but the odds, I think, or the favor, the support would be on the regime change. The regime, that is, they have the guns, they have the army, they have the forces. The people have their fervency, their deep-seated distrust and hatred for the regime. But whether or not that's enough, it remains to be seen.
I mean, they're very vulnerable right now, I would think, with the economy, with all that's going on. In fact, I want to play a clip from Senator Ben Sasse from yesterday on the Senate floor. Play clip number 7, please.
Right now, America's policy toward Iran is hopelessly schizophrenic. We cannot stand on the side of Iranian protesters at the same time that we are trying to re-sign a nuclear deal with the same mullahs that would release billions of dollars back into their hands, help them shore up their power, and do nothing to prevent putting a catastrophic weapon into their genocidal hands.
Do you see it that way, that the administration, by trying to re-enter this nuclear agreement, is bolstering the hand of a vulnerable regime?
Yeah, I think he's just hit it right the nail on the head, Tony. He said it very clearly. Giving billions of dollars through a nuclear deal would just fund this genocidal regime to suppress its people, to oppress its people, to spread its brand of Shiite ideology and around this region against Israel, that it says almost daily that it will want to wipe out the Jewish state. It would fund the Houthis in Yemen, Iranian militias in Iraq and Syria, Hezbollah, Hamas. It is schizophrenic to be on one hand standing with the protesters, but also negotiating with the regime that would literally just fund their genocidal ambitions around this region. Hopefully that there'll be some change of mind and perhaps this deal won't go through, that would just fund the Islamic regime.
So, Chris Mitchell, how is this being viewed in Israel, which obviously has a lot more skin in the game than the U.S. does, because, you know, Iran, they have Israel in their crosshairs and they have the means to come after them.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Israel is supporting the protesters and against the regime, and they're using this perhaps as one other tool in their arsenal to advocate the fact that the U.S. would not enter into a nuclear deal, or any of the nations that would want to join the U.S. In this kind of regime. advocating for this nuclear deal. So Israel certainly is behind these protesters and certainly behind a regime that would really change, that would just literally change the whole region and the whole Middle East, if that, not the world. And I would just add, Tony, as you've been encouraging people to be praying for the people of Florida, and rightly so, but also pray for these protesters that are literally putting their lives on the line for freedom, for a change of this oppressive regime. And they certainly need our prayers. And one other thing that's happening in Iran and has been happening for years is that many of these Muslims are coming to faith to Jesus Christ through dreams and visions, and just pray that that continues, that people come to their faith and find their final hope and eternal hope in Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the gospel is spreading rapidly in Iran. What could you say in terms of what the U.S. could do to be helpful at this point to maybe make this a tipping point?
Well, first of all, I guess get out of that nuclear deal that we've been discussing that would fund and just bolster economically the Islamic regime. The other thing, not only come out for the protesters, but against the regime, if they could do that and they could change their policy. These two U.S. senators, Menendez and Rounds, maybe that's a beginning. Maybe that's a tipping point in the change of foreign policy, that they would advocate for regime change inside Iran. And I would also say, Tony, speak directly to the people on the streets. They need the support of other nations, and especially the United States, during the time when, the regime is tottering to a certain point, and whether they could help be a tipping point, to change this regime that's been in power ever since 1979 and spreading its ideology all the way throughout this region and around the world.
Well, we certainly want to encourage our folks to be praying and to speak to their elected officials and to send encouragement to those in Iran, those that are standing up for freedom and, as you said, putting their lives on the line to do so. I don't think I've mentioned this before, but we have actually a lot of viewers in Iran. This program is heard and seen in Iran, so we want those folks to know we are praying for them.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.